up our study about our motives for worshiping God. And there are some people, different people, perform acts of worship for all kinds of different reasons. For those who belong to God's kingdom, they need to watch their motives for the acts of worship that they do. It's not just the issue of what you're doing to worship God. What's really important is why you're doing it. Do you remember the general principle that Jesus taught about worship that we looked at the beginning of Matthew chapter 6? It says in verse 1, "Be careful not to do your acts of righteousness before men to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven." And the general principle expressed in that verse looks something like this. If you perform religious acts to impress other people, then you'll miss God's reward. If you perform religious acts to impress other people, then you will miss God's reward. When you do something to worship God, you need to make sure that you're doing it for God, not just to put on a show for the people around you. In our day, just like in Jesus' day, there are people who do good religious things, not because they're devoted to God, but just because they're interested in looking good in front of other people. But Jesus says that if you're involved in a lot of religious activity just to show people how spiritual you are, then that has no value at all to God. That's not what this is all about. If your motive for going to church or doing some good deed or helping the poor or praying to God or even for fasting, if you're doing those things just to gain the recognition and admiration of the people around you, then that doesn't mean anything to God. It has no value to Him. Well, that's the general principle here of Matthew chapter 6, verse 1. And to illustrate that principle, to help us understand what He's talking about, Jesus gives us these three examples: giving, praying, and fasting. And we've already looked at giving and praying and talked about each of those. And today we come to this final illustration, the illustration of fasting. And Jesus says, look, let's not just talk about what you do to show your devotion to God. Let's talk about why you do it. Let's talk about your motives for fasting. Now, before we go any further, I think that it would be really good to kind of pause for a while here and talk about what fasting is and about why people do it. Some of you might not be familiar with fasting, and even if you are, you know, there's a lot of different things, ideas out there about what fasting is and about why you should do it. And so I thought it would be good for us to stop and take a look at what the Bible itself says about fasting so that we can kind of get the context for Jesus' words here. In his day when he spoke these words, fasting was a real common thing, and it was one of those three things that was the biggest mark of someone's spirituality as far as a lot of the people were concerned. Whether you gave, and whether you prayed, and whether you fasted. And those are the ways that you could really tell that somebody was close to God. But as you look at the Bible, you get a little bit different picture of what fasting looks like. So let's take a few minutes and do that and talk about what does the Bible tell us as we study that idea about fasting through the scriptures. Fasting means to give up something that you normally enjoy. And usually that means it's referring to skipping one or more meals, or maybe limiting the kinds of foods that you eat, or the quantity of food that you eat. Now, unfortunately, you know, we're all too familiar with this concept, except here in America, we call that dieting, okay? Not fasting. But you know what? That's pretty much the same idea. It's the idea of passing up food. Fasting from food simply means not eating what you'd normally eat when you'd normally eat it. That's what fasting from food is. And it might last part of a day, it might last all day long, or it might last several days. And it might mean abstaining from food and water entirely, in some cases in the Bible, or it might just mean abstaining from certain foods or beverages. Sometimes the word fasting is used in the Bible when it's used about missing a meal. It's missing a meal because you simply have no choice. For example, sometimes people who are poor and can't afford any more to eat, the Bible uses the exact same term of their hunger. It talks about how they're missing meals because they don't have enough to eat. Or somebody who's in a place where it's not convenient to eat, or not food's not available, they also might be forced to fast. So I'm thinking maybe, you know, Gary Noble here, when he goes to Honduras, you know, he might have some forced fasting there, you know. But that's one way that the word is used in the Bible, is kind of an involuntary fasting. And then most of the time, it's used in a different way. You know, sometimes people, because they're worried about something or something's on their mind, they stop eating because they just don't feel like eating. And it's especially true when somebody's really weighed down by some tragedy or some anxiety in their lives. And the idea is that they're just so sad or so worried or so upset that they simply forget to eat. It's just not on their mind. And they may not even feel like it. Food's not the most important thing because they are completely preoccupied with some huge concern or problem. I bet some of you have experienced that. You know, as hard as it is to believe, I've experienced that, where you just, you know, you have something that's going on in your life and it just, you feel sick to your stomach. You know, your appetite disappears and you just don't feel like eating. And so you might skip a meal without even recognizing that that's what you're doing because you're so focused on the problems in your life or the concerns that you have in your life that you just lose your appetite. That's the kind of fasting that's most frequently mentioned in the Bible. In the Bible, people become so preoccupied with their problems and their needs and their concerns that they simply didn't think about eating. They just stopped eating. Compared to whatever it was that they were worried about, food was unimportant. Now, in the Bible, fasting is most often, that kind of fasting, most often comes from a really deep sorrow or mourning. And this is the most common expression of fasting in the Bible. In the cultures of that day, somebody who felt terribly sad, they would set aside their regular clothes and they would wear a gunny sack, the equivalent of a burlap bag. They'd put that on and wear sackcloth. And in fact, feeling extremely sorrowful, some of them would actually rip their clothes off. They'd tear their clothes into shreds. In their grief and their anguish, and then they put on this sackcloth, these burlap rags. They'd take ashes from the fire, and they'd shake that on their heads, and sprinkle it on their heads. They'd rub it all over their face and their arms and their legs. And this was all a sign that they were terribly sad, that they were terribly worried. So everybody would know of their sorrow. They'd see them wearing these burlap bags with all these ashes smeared all over their body. It might have been the death of their closest friend or the death of some beloved national leader. You know, I think back in our history about how the whole nation just kind of halted when President Kennedy was assassinated. And that's the kind of tragedy that might bring on this kind of mourning in the ancient world. It might have been a major defeat in battle where thousands of soldiers had lost their lives. It might have been the terrible news of some impending disaster like an invasion that was about to take place. But this wasn't a normal reaction for normal, everyday grief. This was like extreme grief. This was something that was very, very tragic. Not an everyday tragedy, but something deeply significant. Yeah, I think it would be on a par with our 9/11 experience and the attack that we experienced on 9/11, where it shakes the security of the entire nation, and everybody feels differently because of that. And there's incredible sadness that permeates the society. And that's the kind of deep, deep sorrow that would initiate this kind of mourning of sackcloth and ashes. And in the Bible, fasting is very often associated with wearing sackcloth and ashes and with this kind of sorrow. Fasting is another expression of this deep pain and sorrow and regret. And people are just simply so upset that they just don't think about eating. There are also many times in the Bible where these drastic expressions of deep sorrow are the result of people realizing the depth of their sin. And so, very unlike our experience today, sometimes people were moved to 9/11 type experiences because they recognized how sinful they were. They suddenly came to grips and understood the horror of what they had done and the horror of what they deserved as a punishment. And that drove them into the deepest kind of sorrow that induced this kind of prayer and fasting and sackcloth and ashes. As people have new insight into their own vile depravity, then they reacted with this fasting. And in several passages in the Old Testament, fasting is associated with this idea of humbling yourself. That's the phrase that goes along with it. Is that people humble themselves and they seek God's forgiveness and his protection and turn away from their sin. And so you have this incredible deep sorrow about some tragedy or incredibly deep sorrow about your own sin, about the sin in your life or the sin in your nation that drives people to fasting. And again, it isn't a planned incident. It's something that just spontaneously springs from the heart of somebody who's so troubled that food just becomes relatively unimportant to them. Those two things represent most of the references to fasting that we find in the scriptures. When people are in pain, or when they're in trouble, or when they recognize how deep their sin is and how ugly it is, very often our response is to turn to God. And it's a good response, a natural, built-in good response that we go and seek help from the Almighty, from somebody way beyond us that is bigger than who we are. And it's natural for people to turn in times like that to God and to pray. My father used to comment how struck he was by the fact that even an avowed atheist, if he really got into trouble and something horribly tragic would happen, that his first response was often, "Oh my God." And the fact that an atheist would even mention God in that context of deep trouble driving somebody to God, I think is evidence of our need to look to God. So in these kinds of situations, it would be very natural for prayer to be a part of that. And you know what? Fasting is also associated in the Bible with prayer. And this is especially true, not so much just for everyday conversation with God, but it's especially true when we see somebody with a very critical, deeply emotional request. Like, for example, Hannah, who tried for years to have a baby and was unable to get pregnant. And she fasted and prayed. And David, whose infant son lay dying, and he fasted and prayed and pleaded with God to spare this baby's life, the baby who was dying because of David's own sin. The idea was not that their prayers would be more powerful if they fasted, that somehow that like turbocharged their prayers and made it more likely that God would answer. The idea was that they were just so preoccupied with praying, with pleading to God, with bringing these problems before the Lord and asking Him for His intervention. And they were so constant in that and so deeply enmeshed in it that they simply forgot to eat. They were so concentrated on prayer that they had no interest in food. There's one other type of event where fasting is mentioned in the Bible, and that has to do with beginning a significant or a new spiritual movement or ministry. For example, Moses, before he came down from the mountain with the Ten Commandments, he fasted for 40 days. The Bible says that he didn't have food or water for 40 days, and he came down with the Ten Commandments. And by the way, when he came down and they were already breaking them, he symbolically took those stone tablets and smashed them into pieces. And then he went back up into the mountain and fasted another 40 days as he lay before God in incredible sorrow and mourning over the people's sin and over the rejection, the fact that Israel had rejected God. But the first fast is before the law came, 40 days before the law was introduced, the Old Testament, the Ten Commandments. Jesus fasted for 40 days before he chose his apostles and then started preaching. So before he began his ministry, there was an extended period of fasting. The church in Antioch fasted and prayed before selecting and sending Barnabas and Paul to evangelize Galatia. And then Barnabas and Paul, they fasted and prayed before they selected elders and appointed them in the new Galatian churches. Now, in the experience of the early church, there were many, many times when there were new ministries started and new spiritual movements. And I'm sure that all of them begin with prayer. But you know, in the Bible, there are only a handful of them that began with prayer and fasting. It seems to be something that was not very usual, but unusual, and it happened only in these key specific times. It seems to be much more spontaneous than planned, something that just that grew out of the hearts of the people that were so devoted to God, that they were thinking about spiritual things and they simply stopped thinking about food. Now that might be a little bit different picture than what you expect to hear about fasting, because they represent almost every single instance of fasting that there is in the Bible. There's just a little bit, we'll get to a couple others, but this is most of them, the bulk of them. And that might be a little bit different picture than what you're expecting to hear about fasting, especially if you've read any Christian books or articles that encourage people to fast. It's really easy from reading materials that to get the idea and the impression that fasting is a program. It's something that you can follow, a formula that you can follow in order to supercharge your prayers, you know, to get really turbo prayers, then you want to fast when you pray. And somehow, when you don't eat, then that means that somehow God is bound to listen to you more. It's a sacrifice that we make in order to earn brownie points, spiritual brownie points with God. That's another thing that people think about fasting, is somehow this advances my spiritual walk. Somehow it makes me more mature in God's eyes, or it earns me some kind of credit with God. I've even read articles that promote the physical benefits of a regular fasting regimen. And one article that basically touted fasting as God's solution to America's problem with obesity. All we need to do is follow the prescription in the Bible about fasting. Well, the thing that's kind of interesting about all three of those things is that none of those three ideas come from the Bible. None of them do. Some of them originated in Greek mythology. Some of them came from the ancient Jews and their misperceptions of what fasting was all about. There are other ideas that crept into the church after the second century. And then some we've even added in our own modern health issues at the end of our century. Now, I'm not here to say that fasting's not healthy. You know, I'm the son of a doctor, but I ain't a doctor. And I really don't know if fasting is healthy for you. I can tell you it doesn't feel healthy to me, okay? But I can't tell you whether it's healthy or not, and the Bible really doesn't mention that either. But fasting in the Bible doesn't have to do anything with physical health. It doesn't have anything to do with racking up points with God, and it doesn't even have anything to do with empowering your prayers. Fasting in the Bible happened when people were so occupied with how much they needed God that they simply failed to remember that they also needed to eat. And so they stopped, and they concentrated on their relationship with God. Jesus fasted before his ministry, as I mentioned, 40 days. But you know, we never hear of him fasting any other time in his ministry or in his life. Jesus assumed that his followers would fast, as we're going to see in this passage here today. But he never instructed his followers to fast. There's not a single word of command or exhortation that you should fast. We see a handful of examples of fasting in the experience of the early church in the book of Acts. But in the New Testament, the epistles, the letters to the churches, are completely silent about the subject of fasting. Fasting in the Bible is something that is described, but it's not something that's commanded. Now, there is one example in the Old Testament of God commanding Israel to fast, and that was on the Day of Atonement. It was an annual national day of mourning about sin in the nation of Israel. But the ancient Jews, they were lovers of holiday tradition. And so, over the course of their history, they gradually organized more days of fasting and added them to the calendar. And by the end of the Old Testament period, when the people came back from their exile in Babylon, there were at least 5 different national days of fasting every year, when God had really only started instituting one, and they added all these others. Through the prophets, God spoke to the people and told them that he wasn't at all interested in their fasting if they didn't bother to obey him at the same time. Because many of the people, apparently in the Old Testament, what they were doing is they'd fast, and they had come up with this idea that somehow fasting obligated God to answer their prayers. And so here they are fasting, and they say, God, we fasted for you, and you didn't answer our prayers. And God, through the prophets, answers back, are you surprised we didn't get an answer? Look around the world around you. You neglect the poor. You make a travesty of justice. And those are the reasons why I'm shutting my ears to you and why I'm not answering your cries for help. It's because you're not obeying me. It has nothing to do with your fasting. Your actions speak so much louder than your words, than your spiritual acts of fasting and devotion. Your actions and the way you treat people speak so much louder than that than your repeated days of fasting ever could speak to me. In addition to these national days of fasting, some of the Jews practiced a regular regimen of fasting as well. The Pharisees, who were the conservative religious leaders of Jesus' day, they fasted twice a week, 2 regular days a week. And apparently when they fasted, they also must have put ashes on their face as a sign of mourning. and maybe they wore sackcloth, but they put this sign of sorrow and penitence on their faces so that when people looked at them, they could tell that they were fasting because you saw ashes smeared all over them. And so just in case there was any doubt, if they didn't look hungry enough, they probably had something on their face that let people know that they were fasting. That was probably, given the examples in the Old Testament, probably it was ashes that they had put on their faces. These are the people that Jesus is talking about. He calls them hypocrites, and they could or could not be Pharisees. It doesn't really matter. But the word hypocrite means play actor. And he says, these guys are pretending. They're putting on a show. They're pretending to be devoted to me, but in the inside, they're really not. So these are the people Jesus talks about as he begins to speak to his disciples about their own motives for fasting. And here's what he says in verse 16 of chapter 6. When you fast, don't look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show men that they are fasting. There's two words here that he uses to describe these show-offs. The first one is somber, and it simply means that they had sad faces. They looked terribly sad. And you can tell when they walked by that they were mourning because they looked incredibly sad. You've all, you know, had that experience in your life, either with yourself or somebody else, where somebody walks by, and you can tell their emotions are written all over their face. And you can see how incredibly sad, incredibly angry they are. And in this case, these people looked sad, and they were trying to look sad. You get the idea that they put on these sad faces, that it was a pretense. They looked terrible. The other word is that they disfigured their faces. Now, that's probably not a great translation, because it sounds like they took a knife and, you know, cut up their features or something and scarred themselves. And this is not a permanent issue. In fact, literally what that word means is they made their faces invisible. You couldn't see their faces. And there's a cool play on words going on here because it basically says they make their faces invisible to make their fasting visible. In other words, they make it impossible to see their faces, and by that you can tell that they're mourning and fasting. And they're doing it in order to make it obvious. And so this is what it means. When they said that they disfigured their faces, it probably is talking about these ashes that accompany mourning. And so what they did is they just took some ashes and they wiped them all over their face, you know, and they did this. And I can't tell because I can't see, but can you see that? Okay, yeah, I guess so, right? So, you know, see, kind of disfigured their faces all over here, and there they go. Okay. And, you know, they look terrible. And you go, Chip, what's wrong? Is something wrong? No. Just fasting and mourning. So that's what they looked like, something like that. Their faces were completely disfigured. And it says, when they made their faces invisible, okay, then their fasting was very visible. They could all see that. And that was the point. They wanted it to be obvious that they were fasting, so people would notice them and recognize the wonderfully spiritual, deep Christians, or at least followers of God, that they were. And Jesus says, you know what, that is completely, completely missing the point. And he says, I tell you the truth, those people, they've received their reward in full. They got their reward. When people noticed them fasting, guess what? That was the reward. That was the only reward they got. They wanted the recognition of men, and they got the recognition of men. And that's all that they got. Their fasting wasn't sincere worship. It was ostentatious. They were show-offs. And that's not the kind of worship that God desires. That's ostentatious worship, religious acts that are designed to impress people instead of serving God. And notice the key elements in this kind of fasting. First of all, the action, it's a public suffering. It's obvious to everybody, and you can see it. It's as plain as the ashes on their face that they're fasting. And so it's very public and pronounced and proclaimed. Secondly, the motive. It's done for the purpose of getting men's praise, so that people will say, wow, what a spiritual guy. Look at how deeply concerned he is about sin and about God, that he would do this twice a week. And then the result, their reward, is paid in full. They got what they wanted, which was human praise. And by contrast, Jesus says in verse 17, here's how it should work. When you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face, so that it will not be obvious to men that you are fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen. The point here is the opposite of letting everybody know that you're fasting. The oil is not talking about some kind of blessing or joy. What it's talking about is just a regular part of hygiene in that day. You know, get a little aqua velva and put it under your hair. You know, and the modern way of saying this is, when you're fasting, what you should do is you should wash your face and comb your hair. And don't make it obvious, and don't make it a big deal. And let people see your real face. And let them know, I don't know, I have no idea if I'm going to be able to get this anyway. You know, if you're really nice, you might tell me how I look before I leave. But, you know, it says wash your face. And don't make it so obvious so that people, they'll see you. And they don't see this little mask that you're putting on, this extra show of spirituality, where you you have this that everybody can see, only so that they'll think you're something special. Don't try to let everybody know that you're fasting, like that guy in the video that just, you know, fasting, did you get my memo? You know? And that's the way that we feel, like responding, because we're suffering and we want everybody to know. And Jesus says, you know what, the whole point is, God knows. This is about you and God. It's not about you in the office, or you and your family, or you and your church, or you and everybody that you pass on the street. Are you fasting to concentrate on God? If you are, then that's great. Then it's just between you and Him, if that's the case. And so, don't be obvious about it. You don't need to let everybody know. Now, does that mean that fasting always needs to be done in secret, that you need to make sure nobody finds out about your fasting? No. Just like the previous two examples that we looked at about giving and prayer, there are times when it's perfectly all right for people to know that you're fasting. What this means is not that it must be done in private. There are examples in the New Testament of groups fasting together. What this means is that you can't do those things so that people will know that you're doing them. You don't give or pray or fast so that people will praise you for giving, praying, or fasting. It's all about the purpose and the motive that you have behind what you're doing. See, Jesus is not saying that you've done something wrong if people know that you're fasting. He's not saying that you are doing something wrong if people are impressed by your fasting. What he says is, it's irrelevant whether they know and whether they're impressed. It's wrong to fast for that purpose of impressing people. It's not an issue about what they know or about what they think about it. It's just about you and your motive and your relationship with God. Why did you do that? Did you fast in order to impress people? Or did you fast because you simply wanted to honor God? So Jesus, I think, says, even if you're fasting with other people, what you need to do is try to keep your fasting a personal thing, just between you and God, and then your motives won't be caught in come into question. If it's a problem for you to be tempted by that, then don't tell anybody that you're fasting. And you know what? Then it's going to be a secret, just between you and God. That's the reason why it's so important for us to guard our motives in fasting or in any of our worship, is because the reason why we fast is going to determine the effect that that fasting has on our lives. Jesus urges us to fast in secret so that our motives will be completely pure. And then he says, your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. Those who fast from pure motives are the ones that get rewarded by God. Now, just what is this reward? You know, what is the reward for fasting? The Bible does not promise a specific reward for fasting, although I think we can make a pretty good guess. In the Bible, the thing that drives people to fast is their deep concern, their profound need for God to hear them and for God to act on their behalf. And so most often, when you see fasting in the Bible, that's what it's about. God's about to show up here, and I'm so concerned in letting Him know that I just am simply forgetting to eat. But that's what your real desire is in sincere fasting, is that God show up, that you connect with Him. And perhaps that's the reward of genuine fasting. If you are intent on connecting with God, and so intent on that that you happen to skip a meal or two, then you will connect with God. You know what? Not because you skipped a meal or two, but because you were intent on connecting with God. And because your fasting is not something that earned you an audience with God, but rather it demonstrated that you had a sincere desire to connect with God. And the Bible says that all those who seek God sincerely are going to find Him. However, those people who pretend, who put on a show of seeking God, just so that people would admire them, just so that they fit into the mold of what a spiritual person looks like, they're not going to connect with God. What they get is human recognition. They get human admiration. The one who fasts will be rewarded if that fasting is done out of a pure motive of honoring God. And so now we can see this complete contrast between these two kinds of fasting. This secret fasting is not a public performance, but instead a private discipline, something that just happens between you and God, whether anybody knows about it or not. And you're so focused on God that you're not thinking about eating. It's fasting for an exclusive audience of one. And then the reason is different. The reason for not fasting, the reason for fasting is not to get recognition from people, but rather to honor God, to concentrate on Him, to put your focus on Him. And then the result is not praise from people, but rather a reward from God. You really do connect with God because you've approached Him with a sincere and pure heart whose motive really is to contact God and to tell Him about the things that are deeply troubling you. This last act of worship, fasting, is a little bit different from the others that we've talked about, giving or praying. Because the Bible commands us as believers, as followers of Christ, to give and commands us to pray. But the Bible does not ever command us to fast. God wants you to give and He wants you to pray. But you know what? I think that really it's secondary to God. I'm not sure He really cares whether or not you fast. What He wants is not fasting, but He wants your complete, total devotion. And if that is expressed by fasting, that's great. If it's expressed some other way, that's great. If fasting is done and it doesn't represent your complete, total devotion to God, it doesn't mean a thing to God. It means nothing to Him. And all you get from that is the admiration of other people. At times, our devotion might drive us to be so focused on God that we just don't care about eating. And if that happens, then you know what? That honors God. That brings God honor and glory. Not because you went hungry, but because you evidently cared so much about connecting with God that you forgot that you needed to eat, that it was secondary importance to you, and you skipped that meal so that you could concentrate on your relationship with God. And that's what honors God. Not that you missed the meal, but it honors God because He was so important to you, because you were completely devoted to Him and your heart was sincerely seeking Him. So if that's why you're fasting, because you desperately want to worship God, because you desperately need Him and want to connect with Him, then go ahead and skip your meals. That's what fasting is. And God is honored by that kind of devotion. And that's why it's so important, though, that you fast for the right motives. Because you can go without food for 40 days for all the wrong reasons, so that people will praise you. And then that's all you're going to get is people's praise. Or on the other hand, you can skip French fries after your meal at McDonald's, and only the fries, just because you wanted to honor God. And for that, God will reward you. Because the important question really is not, are you fasting? The important question is, why are you fasting? Let's pray together.